The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. My name is Aurelian. I'm a monk from Lionsgate Buddhist Priory in Lytton, British Columbia in Canada. It's a very small little temple up in the mountains. We live in a little cabin that was built about 50 years ago for summer visitors. It's about a third of the size of this hall here, and there's four of us there, and two dogs and a cat. So it's quite close quarters. Luckily, we have 160 acres of really beautiful forest to roam around in, but in the wintertime when it gets down to 10 below, it's hard to roam. We have an outdoor toilet. We don't have any power. And we now have hot running water, which is a real luxury. Anyways, that's just to introduce myself. I do want to talk about something today. And I'm a little bit nervous because I haven't ever spoken to a group this large before. What I wanted to talk about today is how we can train with our opinions, views, and preferences. And I wanted to start off by reminding myself and everyone here in as good a words as I can, what our true natures are. Our true natures are not dependent on what we like and dislike and what we think about things and our opinions. Our true natures are, as it says, void, unstained, and pure. And this void is, this emptiness is not something that is in opposition to something that is full. The unstained is not in opposition to something that is impure or stained or dirty. The purity is not in opposition to something that is impure. It embraces all things. And it, our lives and who we are and reality and existence is kind of, this is the way I put it, and try not to get too hung up on my words, but it's as if the world is constantly being reborn into purity all the time. And there is a flow to this purity. And it's not a flow of one moment and then another moment. It's a flow that's going in and out at the same time. This is the nature of impermanence. This is the nature of no separate self. Keeping that in mind, let's see if I can make any sense of these notes that I've got scribbled all over here. In the Sandokai, which is the scripture that we recite in the morning, right near the beginning, it says, here born we clutch at things and then compound delusion later on by following ideals. Because we're born into our human bodies and minds, we are born with preferences, likes and dislikes. We grasp after things. We push things away. That's the nature of being human. And we set up ideals for ourselves about what is right, what is good, what is proper. And we push away the things that we have decided are not good, right, and proper. And we create delusion for ourselves. And then we come to training and we bring all those attitudes of mind with us. I hope I can get into this. I had all these ideas about what it meant to meditate, to train, what it meant to be a monk before I became a monk, actually, and what perfect training was. And my teacher would always, and especially the idea was what I was. I had all these opinions about what I was. And I would go to my teacher and tell him what a worm I was and all the bad things I have done. And he would sit there and listen, and he would kind of ignore all that, literally. And it's like he would take his finger and point right to my heart and say, this is who you are. You're a good person. And a lot of the things that I thought were important, he said, were about as important as preferring the color red over the color blue. So we set up all these opinions about the world, about ourselves, and about other people. And then when the world and ourselves and other people don't measure up to our opinions of what is ideal, we get upset, we get angry, or we get sad, or we get disillusioned. And, you know, I had this whole talk in my head, and it's all coming out differently than what I meant to say. So I hope you bear with me, and I hope that something that I say is of use. That's just the Canadian in me. I have to apologize as I go along. I want to read something from... This is from Dogen's Shobo Gansuzui Monkey, as recorded by his disciple Koen Edjo. These are short little, more informal things that he did at teas and talks more informally. And he's talking about how arguments can happen. And why people feel it's important to win arguments. Even if you're speaking rationally and another person says something unreasonable, it is wrong to defeat him by arguing logically. On the one hand, it is not good to give up hastily saying that you are wrong. On the other hand, even though you think that your opinion is reasonable. So he's not saying that you shouldn't have opinions, and he's not saying that opinions are bad, but he's not saying that you have to insist on your opinion. And at the same time, if somebody is not being logical, you don't have to give in to them. But there are ways of dealing with it. This is what he says. Neither defeat him nor withdraw saying you are wrong. It is best to just leave the matter alone and stop arguing. If you act as if you had not heard and forget about the matter, he or she too will forget and will not get angry. This is a very important thing to bear in mind. What comes across to me here is compassion. We've all been in a situation where we've been in an argument. We know we're right, and the other person is wrong. And we want to insist that the other person admit that we're right. Often, the other person might be angry. Well, you might be angry too. If you can just let go of that needing to be right and that insisting, you can have compassion for the other person. Sometimes the other person might be actually really hurting behind the anger. And then you can kind of put a little bit of space in between things and allow compassion to flow through there. And not, then it doesn't matter who won, who lost. It doesn't matter whether you're right and they're wrong. I remember Reverend Master Kinray once said, you can be absolutely right about something, and as soon as you get angry, you're wrong. And it's true. He also talks a little bit more about... about arguing with people. He's talking about this in particular. He's talking about when people get into arguments about the Dharma, about points of Dharma, which he says is just absolutely pointless. An ancient person said, it is not bad to be defeated in front of the wise, but do not win in front of the stupid. When someone misunderstands what you know well, speaking ill of him is your own error. I really like that. It's okay to win, to lose in front of the wise, but don't build yourself up by winning in front of somebody who's being foolish. You know, there's that story of these two monks were arguing about some point of the Dharma. Oh, it was something about someone was fanning themselves, and they're saying, "Is the, you know what? I'm not going to try to tell this story because I'll get it wrong." But the upshot is this little old lady broke through both of them, and I think one was saying, "Is it the wind moving, or is it the hand moving, the fan that's moving?" And she said, it's your minds that are moving. There's always a nice, wise little old lady that comes along and breaks through all this, you know, which I appreciate. I remember once when we first bought our property before we moved up there, we discovered this little, tiny little holiday trailer. And one of our congregation members, who's always got really big ideas, thought it would be a good idea to drag it. It was about 100 meters to where we wanted to put it, up this hill, and place it. And we could use it as a tool shed. And there was four of us there. I was not feeling very well at all. I was quite ill. So I just kind of stayed in the background. And there were two very strong-willed individuals who kind of took charge. And they both had a different approach to things. One was, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. And the other one was, cautious, cautious, cautious. Let's do everything cautiously and be really, really careful. Think through everything and think through everything that might go wrong. And at first, there was this clash because they were both insisting that their way was right. And it got really kind of uncomfortable, especially for the other two people who weren't really didn't really have a dog in the fight, as they say. And so at a certain point, for some reason, they both stopped. I think because they were so equal in their temperaments and insistent that they decided to kind of listen to each other. And it was very interesting what happened. I mean, this took all afternoon. And one of them would say, well, let's just do it. And the other one would say, well, I don't know. And then they'd say, well, let's just try it out. And then the cautious one would say, okay, let's try it. And then at a certain point, because it was all kinds of little things, we were doing like what the Egyptians did, you know, putting fence posts underneath it and dragging it up with a jeep and then taking the ones from the back and putting them back in the front. The full speed ahead guy kept saying, it worked for the Egyptians. what I saw was this beautiful harmony that happened. And it actually became an enjoyable enterprise because each person was willing to give a little bit and to not insist on their way. And they were each able to then work together and listen to the other person's opinion and consider it before tossing it out. And, you know, I think if people could do that more often, it'd be a much more harmonious world. You know, I see I don't want to get into too much worldly stuff, but in the world, especially in the United States here, there's this people are so entrenched in their opinions about how things are that they can't even hear what the other person is saying. And that's quite a shame, I think. Am I doing something wrong? Oh, thank you. Thank you. So if you're on one side of the fence, you know, all those people who voted for Donald Trump, they don't know anything. And if you're on the other side of the fence, all those people who didn't or who are against them don't know anything. Well, probably each side has something to offer if you could just listen. If you could just kind of put aside your own opinion for a minute and listen to what is going on underneath. And this also applies to ourselves. When we are sitting in meditation, at least when I do, I often have this almost like a voice chattering away. And my voice, my particular voice goes, you're no good. You know, look what you did. Or, oh, you don't know how to sit properly. Oh, and then if I do kind of sense some kind of peace coming, it's like, oh, that's not really real, you know. It's like that's how my little voice goes. Somebody else's voice might go differently. But it's like we're telling stories to ourselves constantly. And what I've learned through meditation and through the practice of letting go is that even though those voices still chatter away, I just don't need to listen to them anymore. I don't need to pay them any mind. They are not, actually, they're not even important. And they don't matter. We know who are. We can know our own hearts. We can know that purity I talked about at the beginning. We can experience that flow for ourselves. And the little voices that are doubting us are just actually things that we've created. And we don't have to pay them any mind. I had a whole bunch of other stuff I was going to say. I do want to say one thing. There's I forgot to bring it with me, but there's that poem called On Trust in the Heart by Kanchi Sulsan. At the beginning it says, the way to the ultimate is not hard. Simply give up picking and choosing. And I think what he's saying is it's not complex. Actually, it is very hard to give up picking and choosing. But it is possible. And then we don't have to worry so much about our own comfort. And, oh, I like this and I don't like that. I'm cold. Or, oh, I'm warm. One ancient sage once said, when you're cold, be cold. When you're warm, be warm. I remember when I was a brand new monk, I jammed my thumb I was trying to fix something and it was bleeding it was really awful. It was really painful. But I thought, no, a monk shouldn't show that they're in pain. I don't know where I got that idea from. Reverend Master came rushing into the bathroom and he said, oh my God, he says, is it painful? And I said, oh, no, it's not painful. And he just about yelled at me. He said, Reverend Aurelian, when you're somebody encountering an earthquake, be somebody encountering an earthquake. And I said, oh, okay, it hurts. It hurts a lot. And I've never forgotten that, you know. I had these ideas about what a monk should be. A monk is just a human being who has decided to train in a certain way. No better and no worse than anybody else. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say is that when we can let go of our opinions, even a little bit, it's easier for us to start to learn from everything around us. And then instead of having everything coming through us and then getting filtered through our opinions, we can be open. It's like we allow a little bit of space and then everything can start teaching us. Everything. Even people who are acting really, really unwisely or who are actually even making us angry, we can still sit still and we can learn from them. And I've also learned that the people who make me angry, I can learn to have compassion for them. Or angry, you know, upset or whatever. Now what I can see is that actually there's something really grieving underneath there and hurting. And sometimes you can even actually help them. I remember once, sorry to keep telling these stories, but I remember once I was waiting for a bus in Vancouver. I wasn't wearing my robes because I had to go over to see an acupuncturist. And this lady started talking to me, this old lady, and she was really cranky. She had the scowl on her face, and she said, oh, the bus hasn't come for so long. These buses are no good here in Vancouver anymore. And in the past, I probably would have shut myself off from that person and not even answered them. But I don't know why. I didn't immediately jump to my conclusions about who she was and what kind of a person she was. I said, oh, that's too bad. She said, well, it's all these Asian drivers that they've hired nowadays. And again, that would have probably made me... And I said, really? I think the drivers are pretty good here in Vancouver. I said, you know, like 40% of the population in Vancouver is Asian. What are you going to do, not hire 40% of them or something? But I didn't, I sort of said it with a kind of sense of humor. I wasn't trying to argue with her. And then she said something else and I said, well, do you have any Asian friends? And she said, well, yes, actually. And at my old folks' home, there's a couple of Chinese women that I really like. And then her face started to get soft. And then we just started talking. And she started telling me about herself. And I realized this woman was really, really lonely. Not only that, but she'd had a really, really difficult life, as she started to tell me. And her whole manner just transformed. I guess what I'm saying is that because at that moment, at least, I was able to kind of let go of my first impressions and my opinions about this person and try to, well, I wasn't trying to do anything. I was just talking to her, but also being willing to listen to her. I shouldn't think she was real. She really appreciated having somebody to listen to. And that way, I think I was a benefit to her. There will come a point in everybody's existence when they will have to let go of everything, all their opinions about the world and themselves. And that is when they come to the point of death. It doesn't matter what you think about yourself or other people or the world. You can't bring any of that with you through that doorway. And it's not necessary to wait that long. There will, if we continue to practice our meditation, will come, you know, there'll be a point where all conditions will ripen and then Supreme Mind will manifest. And that's why it's so important to practice serene reflection meditation. Because that, when we sit in meditation, for those moments, for those minutes, even if you've only got 5 minutes in the morning, sit, and just for those 4 or 5 moments, give yourself over to it. Let go, abandon, drop everything that you're worried about, all your views, all your opinions. And then you'll come at some point, as Dogen says, to the top of a 100-foot pole. And there's a thing here that he wrote. An ancient said, at the top of a 100-foot pole, how do you advance one step further? In such a situation, we think that we would die if we were to let go of the pole, and so we cling firmly to it. It's frightening to let go of everything. It's frightening to let go of all our things that we've decided it's necessary to have an opinion about. Because what will happen if we let go absolutely? Who will we be then? This is what Dogen says. Saying advance one step further means the same as having resolved that it would not be bad. And so we let go of bodily life. We should give up worrying about everything, from the art of living to our livelihood. Unless we give up such things, it will be impossible to attain the way, even if we seem to be practicing earnestly as though trying to extinguish a fire enveloping our heads. Just let go of body and mind in a decisive manner. So I hope everyone here will find themselves on top of that pole one day. And if you do, have no fear. Take the next step. see what happens. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.